So you talked a lot about energy and many, many times during our conversation until now. So what is this energy? Where does it come from? What is behind that?
Well, I think everything, in a sense, you could say is energy. And I guess I'm using this word energy rather than thoughts or feelings. In a sense, I guess when I use this word energy, I'm probably talking about beingness, or something like beingness would be another word.
Being, more being than being, more being than others. Who is there?
Somehow if there are thoughts, or if there's a feeling or a body sensation, that somehow is usually connected to me. But if there's no me, then I find myself talking more about energy. So it would suggest that well, it's rather interesting. I don't know. I mean, probably I haven't really looked so much. I mean, by energy, I know what I'm talking about. It's more like sensations. Mm-hmm. Like for example, when a structure is working, there's a sense of something getting tighter, or some tension in the body, for example.
Which is also an energy.
Energy-wise, I could say the energy is getting kind of smaller or something like that. And equally, when everything is flowing and there is nothing really in the way, it feels everything gets very expanded and light. And so again, I'd use the word energy. But okay. I'm probably talking about something that's just the natural workings of existence, I guess, of life itself.
Yeah, one can sense that there is different environments. That's how it's experienced in Reinhold, yeah, so...
Yeah, when I met you the other day for the first time, you know, there was an immediate feeling, though, you know, there was a joy and lightness. Yeah, it was very easy to meet you. So there wasn't so much a feeling of meeting somebody. It was more like the energy of this person is lightness and fun and joy. You know, this feeling. So then I would use energy or something. Joyful, light energy, fun energy.
Open, flow.
Yeah, open,
flowing,
you could say, kind of words like open, flowing. And equally, one of the people in the community spent yesterday afternoon with a friend. And when she came back, she said, oh, you know, such a lovely guy, but I really don't want to meet him again. I said, why not? Oh, so much mind, you see. So that she actually couldn't enjoy the good parts of it because he was so aware that, in a way, she could never meet him. There was no real meeting possible. And she was actually quite surprised. And it made, in a way, her realize what has been happening. She's been living in this community a year now. It made her realize what's been happening to her here, which... unless you have some kind of mirror like that, you can't really see, perhaps, because it's very subtle. The changes are very subtle.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of communication goes non-verbal. I mean, this is also recognized in industry when they do communication models. People are taught 90% approximately is non-verbal. It's just this energy exchanges or whatever happens there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems to me more and more that, you know, it's like there is an energy field.
Yes.
And what we call me and you is some kind of organism in this energy field. And there's just one energy field.
It's like contractions.
So we're not really separate. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about having these kind of dialogues. Who's talking and who's listening?
I have no idea.
So somehow using words like energy makes a bit more sense because using the other kind of words, I'm listening to you. You know?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work really.
Yeah. Yeah, we are using words like I, the language, also language structures invite to separate and then sequentialize, so they create time also. And somehow this whole game is driven by the need or the opportunity to have a conversation between bodies. But even what is a body or what communicates? No idea. There are apparent bodies, but where does that? What is the relevance of that body? No idea. The relevance of this body, I have no clue. So, and somehow a play seems to play itself out. And even when there are structures and there are communication blockages, like the one that you described with this lady from the community yesterday, it's also not relevant. Yeah. So
yeah, you see, we do things like shopping, taking the kids to the playground or the zoo or something. You know, so you meet, if you like, people who live in a different reality. I mean, the normal reality, you can say, that nearly every human being lives in is this rather solid kind of reality, where when they say me, they have a clear meaning about it, you know.
Are you sure?
Well, it depends. I mean, maybe they haven't even thought about it. Maybe they just completely accept this me. They haven't really ever examined this me. I mean, as soon as you start examining the me, then the whole thing crumbles, starts to crumble anyway.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I took from last Monday's discussion. Somebody after the meeting asked me, when did this, I believe it was you, when did this me, this I dissolve? I couldn't give an answer, so I never, in my story, that I never really knew who I was. I never had an impression that I reflected even that. Somehow it was given, it was a habit to say I, and somehow it seemed to be related to the body, and this who am I question, it did not come. Only very late, and then it was rather vague.
I think most people live without examining that. Because in the normal workings of society, the people we surround ourselves with, friends, work colleagues, our own family, they all support this idea about me.
It's not more but a habit.
It's just a habit passed down through generations. And it's only when you start to examine it, or this lady we were talking about, Eva, we talked about Eva on Monday, who's a yoga teacher. So, I mean, her thing seems to be that, I don't know her so well, but she's obviously done meditation and yoga for some time. And now suddenly this question of who am I starts arising inside her very strong, and she has energetic things happening. And so now suddenly she's writing emails, and she's very interested to kind of understand about this me. So it just happens to some people kind of spontaneously. And I think also sometimes it happens that while somebody's doing their normal daily life, like they're in a supermarket buying groceries, they could then just spontaneously, they suddenly, something happens. I remember meeting one woman, and she suddenly became very huge, and she seemed to fill up the whole supermarket, was her kind of way of explaining how she felt. So when something dramatic happens like that, then you can't really hold on to this old, you know, normal, habitual idea about who you are. And then she talked to a friend, and this friend knew me, so then this friend brought this woman to me, and I said, well, actually, that was a nice experience, because that's probably more true than what you were thinking before. And then she started to attend meetings, and she became interested to understand who am I. So it can happen spontaneously like that. Somehow it seems that more and more people are interested, and less people are just accepting what was given from their parents. But maybe through the internet, through the communications, maybe there's something on the level of the planet. I don't know, there's something about the planet, I don't know really. But it seems that quite a lot of people are becoming interested in this examination. Whereas, you know, 50 years ago, well, I'm not that old, let's say 30 years ago, 30 years ago, I can remember that it wasn't really so common. And for example, when I became gradually interested, all the friends I'd had before, I couldn't really communicate anymore because they were absolutely not interested in what I suddenly became very interested in. And so I wasn't interested to talk about football or last night's television or where should we go and eat or the weather, because I'm English, the weather, you know. So those topics didn't really interest me anymore. So somehow it wasn't really possible. So those friends disappeared out of my life. And then I met new people who were somehow interested in the same looking that I was interested in.
It seems like resonances, the resonances change, the frequencies change or something like that.
Yeah,
could be an expression.
I mean, look, for example, if you look at your story, I think probably when you came here on Monday, you weren't quite sure. And already tonight, you've had dinner with us, you've met quite a lot of the people, and you can feel something like fitting, you could say. I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, it's like an easy meeting for you here, I think.
It's all easy here, That's my experience here. It's normal.
But maybe sometimes you're at some training conference now, I think. Do you find it as easy there, at the training conference?
For me, yes.
Yeah? But when you interact with the people at lunch, you know, for example, if there's six of you having lunch together, don't you find it's not so easy?
That's a good question. The meetings that I had this week were easy. So it very rarely happens that there are situations which are not easy for this.
For example, because I do all these meetings, I'm talking a lot, you know, hours on end.
Yes.
In the daily life, I'm also talking a lot. But actually, if I go somewhere, actually, I'm quite happy not to talk at all.
No, that's what I usually do. I do not talk very much.
Right. But then, of course, the ordinary society would find that slightly... There's some tension in that, you know, because most people are always chit-chatting to each other.
Yeah, okay, I cannot comment. Usually I prefer to listen and to see what happens. I don't know what in the others happens then. I mean, I love jokes and try to get the humor out of every situation. Somehow creating stories and associations. I think this is welcome. Most people laugh, so I assume are not too angry about it.
Right.
But what is really going on inside them, I have no clue.
I mean, it's very easy for me to start asking you questions, actually. So one question is... I've done a few too many of these things. But anyway, it's interesting for me a little bit. So, I mean, would you feel yourself falling more into an acceptance of some destiny unfolding?
I would not even touch the word destiny. I just have no clue. And I can accept that. I can allow myself to have not the faintest idea of what is going on. So, but now I have another question. What about these spiritual names? What is...
The names I give people in the community?
The names you give people, you yourself have a name.
Right.
What is the tradition of this, and what is the energy of this, or the meaning?
I think it's part of the Indian tradition that a master will give a name to somebody. And my own sense about that, well, for example, if somebody would ask me for a name, I would try to find a name where I would see I can encourage somebody. For example, we have this very quiet man over there from Portugal. And my impression about him is that actually he's quite a powerful guy, you know. But you would never really know at a quick glance that he's a big, powerful guy because he's quite small and he doesn't really express himself so much, you see. So when he asked me for a name, I gave him the name Shiva, you see, which is kind of is the strongest kind of male energy you could have, you see. So... the idea of that, for example, is to encourage somebody to come into that potential which I can see there. You see, there's another gentleman over there, and I gave him the name Raj, which means king, you see. And because of his difficult childhood, he wasn't really living like a king. He was more like the king's servant, I guess, yeah. So by giving him the name king, I'm encouraging a certain potential I can see there, you see. And these names can change quite easily. I mean, we change them also. Mm-hmm. When somebody appears to be ready, we give them a new name that will encourage some other aspect.
So each time he is called that name, he is reminded of Luknes's...
Well, he probably isn't anymore, but no? In the beginning, perhaps, you know, one is more conscious about it. For example, my name... It came to me in a slightly funny way because my own master hadn't given me a name. I was using my original name. But somehow visiting one of the Indian masters I was visiting for my book, I became quite... We came into a very loving space together, I think. He was somehow touched by me and I was very touched by him. And one day the words come out of my mouth, you know, would he give me a name, you know? And then he gave me a name which actually I didn't quite like, because he gave me the name Sadananda. I can't now remember what it means in Indian, but in kind of the Western feeling of it is kind of sad, you know?
Oh,
so I didn't really like this connotation of Sadananda, you know? So I said, well, could you find another name?
You ask once, why not ask a second time?
So anyway, it was all very playful. So anyway, and then he chose this Premananda, you see. And that was a little bit more shocking because the real meaning of Premananda is something like unconditional love. So in a way, when I got this name...
That's a tough one.
I felt like, well, this is really encouraging some big potential, you know? And it still feels very much like that, you know? I don't feel I've got anywhere near this name, yeah?
Yes.
But it's like really encouraging me for probably a few more lifetimes even. So... Actually, many times I felt a bit like I should shake off this name, you know. But actually, because I had a very lovely connection with him, I just leave it, you know. I just leave it.
Mm.
I think it can be quite a useful device, if you don't take it seriously, to have a name, you know, a spiritual name.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as people understand it's, you know, it's not because we're a cult or a sect or something like this, you know. When it's only for the person himself or herself to have a kind of constant reminder, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not thinking about my name all the time, but sometimes something happens and then, you know, it's hanging there. And I'm like, oh, God.
So, do you have a
hailed again.
You have a buddy who then says Premananda, Premananda. What about reincarnations?
Reincarnations. I always find this a difficult topic. I don't really know what to say about it. I think anything I would say about it would only be some sort of concept which makes sense, you know, to make sense to my intelligence or something. I can say there's a concept, you know. And of course, in a lot of the traditional spiritual religious systems, they completely believe in reincarnation. Yeah? So in the Hindu system, in the Tibetan Buddhist system, they very much even formalize, yeah, this belief. For example, the Dalai Lama, when he leaves his body now, before he dies, he will leave some letter or something where he's giving some kind of clues or some informations. And then they have, I don't know exactly how it all works, but anyway, they have a group of people who take this information a few years after he's left his body, when they have some feeling that he must have by now reincarnated, and then they go off searching for some small boy, and they take some of the possessions of the, you know, the previous Dalai Lama, and it seems that, you know, they have their ways of telling, okay, this could be the Dalai Lama. I don't know. So I don't really know what to do with that, because mm-hmm. in another sense, it's hard to imagine how that works.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also imagine that it can work. So I don't really understand it, but I can also be open to the possibility that it does work. Mm-hmm. Because in a way, if in fact it's all one kind of big soup of energy, and the human body is a bit like a spider who brings out of its own body, you know, the spider's web, yeah? And then when he's finished doing his fly fishing, he then takes this web back inside again. So this there's this sense that, you know, you can have a body and then you drop your body and then you get a new body, you know? So I can imagine it can work. But I'm not so interested, really. I mean, it's not really important.
Yeah, who then would, or what would reincarnate? Huh?
I mean, I can see the possibility that there is some kind of essence which can reincarnate. I'm open to that possibility.
Mm.
But anything I really would say, I would have to say it's only a concept, because I don't really know.
Yeah, it's my feeling is also there is continuous change and flowing, and bodies getting born and passing away, and matter shifted and energy shifted. This vastness.
I mean, I have one, you know, being sometimes a bit logical, I sometimes wonder, well, how does it work when the population of the planet is getting more and more, you know? So if it's getting more and more, how does that work then? It's going to split into two, and, you know, you get half of, you know, because, you know, the population is, you know, increasing very dramatically now. So I don't really, you know, logically, or it would only be concepts. I don't really know.
I share that one. Yeah. What about the master-disciple relationship? You talk a lot about surrendering to a master.
Do I talk a lot about that?
I think so. I think so. You talked in past satsangs. I saw some statements when you said, "Yeah, surrender to the master," and somehow, how does this work?
I think from my own 30 years history, you know, I fell into having two masters, and I would have to say that in both cases, when it happened, there was even a resistance from me that I didn't want a master. I mean, when it happened the first time, I didn't even know what a master was, actually, the first time. And then later, I knew what a master was, but I didn't really have any idea I needed a second master. So actually, in both times, it just kind of happened despite any idea I had or about it. But if I would look back on all that, it seems to me that I got a great benefit from both meetings. In the first case, you know, I was working as a normal guy, as an architect. I had kind of questions inside. And by bumping into this first master, he basically just kind of took me and, you know, slapped me around a bit and got me meditating. And my whole life changed because of the contact with this man. And when I first met him, I was one of these kind of English, middle-class, professional, I know pretty much everything kind of people. You know?
Yuppie.
Yeah. I was a real yuppie with white suit, you know, a little moustache and, you know, gold-rimmed glasses and, you know. But when I met this master, it was like, wow, you know. It was like, wow. Even though I didn't really, in the beginning, like him very much, but somehow he was just so amazing that I was completely shocked, basically. I was completely shocked by this human being, you know, because what he was talking about, I mean, I never even thought about most of the things he talked about, but somehow when he talked about them, they seemed to go deep inside. I was very touched. And so touched that I very quickly kind of gave up my whole life to spend time with him.
Was he a real master traveling around giving satsangs, or was
no? He was he was Osho, who was originally Rajneesh.
Ah, okay.
And he was an Indian master staying in his ashram, so you had to go to him. He had been traveling in India before, but by the time I met him, he was only staying in his ashram. But he was very available. He would come for 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening. So he was pretty available, but not in any personal way.
So, but you went to Pune or where his ashram was to meet him there?
Yes, yes.
And curiosity drove you there, or what was it?
Well, it's a very strange story, because actually what happened was that I was an architect living in Tokyo in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I went to visit a German architect, a professor of architecture, in fact, to talk about Japanese architecture. And so it just turned out that he was a disciple of Rajneesh.
Okay.
So when I went to meet him, I thought we were going to talk about architecture. But actually we talked about chakras and meditation and masters and blah, blah, blah. And I remember in the morning, as I was leaving his house, he said to me something like, "You're really ready for this." And I remember very clearly my mind said, "I'm not interested." So there was this strange situation, really.
Okay.
And then existence picked me up and put me to his ashram, basically. I was never interested to go there. I just was picked up and put there. And when I was there, suddenly, it was like, wow, you know, and it's like immediately, almost within seconds, it just felt like, oh, this is the right place. Immediately. It was very instantaneous. And then I went to meetings with Rajneesh, he was called. And it was like this amazing man sitting there talking about all kinds of amazing stuff, which I was very interested in, but I didn't know I was interested in. So that was how the first master happened. It just happened, I can say. And mm-hmm. looking back on it, it was an amazing time. It completely changed my life.
And how long did you spend there?
Well, I was coming and going for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I lived, I can't remember now really how, I lived for quite long periods because I didn't have so much interest to keep going back and forth. So I somehow managed to make a living by staying there. So I was living, I don't know, about 5 years perhaps I lived there.
So would you call this relationship that you surrendered to this Rajneesh? Or who surrendered? Or this surrendering?
Well, I would say when it was happening, I was just completely in resistance. So there was this attraction. So there was one part of me saying, wow, amazing, yes, you know, so there was mm-hmm. an attraction. And then there was another part saying, absolutely not, thank you very much, I don't need a new name, why should I have a new name, you know, and I had all my English conditioning working, you know, so there was a sort of something happening, you know, for a few years probably. But what really happened, if I look back on it now, what happened in those 15 years was surrendering, but not surrendering to him.
So, okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, in a way, what I can understand now is I was surrendering to the self. It wasn't surrendering to him as in somebody. Mm-hmm. So there was a surrender happening, but there was nobody surrendering. And somehow by being with a master, there are all kind of devices that happen, which create a kind of surrender. You know, you have sort of, there's resistance and there's openness, and these things kind of work together. And somehow the play is that you become more and more surrendered, but not to him or her. You become surrendered actually to your very own self.
To the self. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.